What's up, guys? It's Sharp. On today's show, Ben and I talk a little Rockets-Lakers, the madness at Staples last night, and then we get into Warriors and our horrible Warriors predictions from last episode. And then we just go through the rest of week one, talk a little Sixers and Embiid, Utah Jazz, the Wolves on night one, Anthony Davis, and we finish off with Ben's war on Canada and DeMar DeRozan. So it should be fun, and here we go. Hello, and welcome back to another episode of Open Floor. I'm Andrew Sharp, and on the other line, fresh off a night with James Harden, Ben Golliver. What's up, man?
Hey, Andrew. It wasn't just the James Harden show, though. You know, Lakers-Rockets, it was like re-immersion camp for Lakers fans. I got to the arena yesterday about, 2 hours early, whatever, like I normally do, and I was just blown away by how many people were in Kobe Bryant jerseys, and there was no really other jerseys. I mean, they've got D'Angelo Russell, they've got Brandon Ingram, they've got guys you could buy jerseys for and you could market, but they haven't really, the Lakers fan base that goes to the games hasn't really picked up on those guys yet. So I started to get really worried for them. Like, did they not admit that Kobe retired? Like, were they going to be just incredibly disappointed once the game started? And they go through this they go through this whole pregame introduction like they normally do, and there's just no sign of Kobe. And there was excitement in the crowd, but it almost seemed like this weird feeling of like, are we all in the right place? Like, are we being punked? Like, where is Kobe? Why isn't he here?
A harsh reality check for the Kobe cult.
It just came at them really, really fast. But then everything flipped on its head because the young Lakers played like right up to their standards as this young, entertaining team. Luke Walton's clearly gotten through to them in certain ways. And
the young Lakers are awesome.
Yeah.
We've paid lip service to this. For the last couple months, I've been saying, this Lakers team is going to be fun. But part of, in my head, I was thinking, they're going to be fun to think about. I don't know how fun they're going to be to watch. But they were so much fun last night. I mean, D'Angelo has the eternal green light. Jordan Clarkson was great down the stretch. Julius Randle had a nice night. Like, it was a lot of fun to watch those guys roll out there.
I basically crush Julius Randle every time I'm near a microphone, and I thought that's the best game I've really ever seen him play in terms of all-around contributions. Yeah. Now, here's the thing, though. I think we need to give a big assist to the NBA schedule makers because they gave them the perfect team to play on opening night in the Rockets, because I have never seen two teams concede as many dunks and like wide open shots as the Lakers and the Rockets last night. So there's a chance that those are the two worst defenses in the NBA. They just happen to play each other. And so it worked out really well for them. But the fans who started the night so discombobulated were just loving it by the end of the game. They were going crazy. And it actually felt like they were cheering for the team rather than a single figurehead. So I felt happy for the Lakers fans. I mean, you kind of feel happy to a certain degree for a guy like Luke Walton, who, his life totally flipped upside down this summer. And that's a perfect way to get off in the start of the season. Russell looks very comfortable in the I believe I'm a superstar role. That's kind of the nice way of putting it. And I thought Ingram got his feet wet, too. So, I mean, it was basically a dream start for the Lakers.
Ingram definitely had some moments. What was it like sitting there? First of all, confession, I fell asleep late in the third quarter, so I missed the fourth quarter, which is pretty embarrassing, but I'm blaming that on Golden State going late Tuesday night. But what was it like being there? Because watching from home, it honestly felt like an all-star game. Like, that was basketball on crack.
No, there was simultaneous head pounding on press row every time there'd be a dunk just completely given up, a backdoor cut, and there's no one's even within 10 feet of the cutter, and then they dunk, and it's just everybody just goes head desk. Like, you could audibly hear pounds on press row.
It was amazing. It was straight up Pro Bowl defense.
Yeah. Well, the other thing too is we were all so busy just trying to research James Harden's individual records, because he had 17 assists with 15 minutes left in the game. And it's he's got a career high. He could go for 35 assists here. What's happening? We got to figure out exactly where is this going to rank. But the Rockets really fell apart down the stretch. And, I thought from the flip side, the lack of Lakers defense made the Rockets look pretty good too, right? Like, Harden looked unreal. He's one of, many stars to really have a strong opening night performance. some of his shooters really stepped up. He was getting really wide open looks for everybody, whether it's dunks, you know, for Capella rolling to the rim, whether it's their shooters. I mean, they're pretty much getting anything they want on offense. And then the wheels just kind of fell off in the fourth quarter. So I don't know what to totally make of it from Houston's standpoint, but everything that people expected to see from Harden in D'Antoni's system is definitely going to be what we're going to see the next 6 months.
Yeah. From a Lakers standpoint, my two biggest takeaways were, one, that Julius Randle really could, like, I think he's going to be the biggest beneficiary from Luke Walton, because I think he's in a good spot and Walton is going to get the best out of him. And the other thing, I mean, we pretty much know what we're getting with D'Angelo. Like, he's going to have a real solid year, put up a lot of points, questionable defense. But Ingram is going to be a lot of fun to watch every night, because he has moments where you see what he's going to be. Like, he was guarding Harden for some of the time. Obviously, you can only do so much against James Harden, but, like, Ingram was a lot of fun to watch. I'm psyched for the next 6 months of Lakers games.
Yeah, I'm already to start the Brandon Ingram needs to be in the starting lineup, like, train right now. And
That was the other thing. I cannot believe Nick Young is still on the Lakers. Like, I feel like that is an era that probably should have ended last year.
It's pretty shocking, but he's become like a cult hero among the media contingent out there, because, you know, he's finally playing defense, supposedly. And I guess Luke Walton kind of gets these digs in every once in a while. I was like, oh, I think I saw someone hit the ground. I'm pretty sure it was Nick Young, and not totally positive. Like, I think I saw somebody block a shot. It might have been Nick, but I don't know. So it's kind of an on-running joke for the Lakers media. But hey, maybe you ease Brandon Ingram into this thing for like 4 games, 5 games. But I think we just need to take the training wheels off and throw this guy into the deep end. I'm so ready to see more.
Right.
How great was that turnaround jumper? I mean, like, MJ-esque in the paint. I mean, just gets to his spot. No chance of anyone blocking it. Yeah, he just looked pretty confident overall. And I see why people say, hey, he's not quite ready. Certainly physically not quite ready. But, man.
That's part of why he's fun to watch, because you can tell that he's a couple years away. And right now he's like 160 pounds. But it's fun to see him thrown into the mix and try to hang regardless. And he does an okay job.
Yeah, but I mean, really, who are we to question Luke Walton's decisions? I mean, he's sitting atop the Pacific Division ahead of the Warriors at this point. So maybe we should let him roll with his coaching strategies, and he might know more than us.
I was going to say, speaking of teams that aren't playing defense, we got to talk about the Warriors. I mean, that's the biggest story in basketball this week. Will probably be the biggest story all year. But man, I cannot believe opening night. Throwback to our last pod on Tuesday, where I predicted a 20-point plus victory. I think you predicted 10 or 15. Great start for us to the season.
Oh no, I said the Spurs were going to win. No, I'm playing. We were completely off. We completely misread that. And that's, you know, I'm going to try to pretend like I was just trying to fuel Greg Popovich's motivational abilities for San Antonio.
I mean, I was definitely egging you on. I framed the question, how much will the Warriors win by?
No, but
it's all my fault.
No, I was pretty sure they were going to come out a lot better than they did. Oh, hey, real quick, by the way, what's a more impressive start for Luke Walton? 24-0 last year with the Warriors or 1-0 this year with the Lakers?
I don't know. We have to wait and see quite how shitty the Rockets defense is going to be all year.
Oh, it's going to be bad.
Exactly. Like, I don't, we shouldn't read too much into the Lakers last night.
Okay. So back to the Warriors, though. It's a very short list of things that went right, you know? Like, I think they acclimated Kevin Durant on offense. He looked comfortable. He didn't look out of sync.
Durant for the first 6 minutes looked scary. Like, I watched that, and it was back and forth. It was a close game, but I was thinking, like, wow, if this is what KD is going to be, because he was on defense getting his hands on a lot of passes, and then on offense kind of getting whatever he wanted. And I was like, all right, well, the rest of the league is screwed. But then they just didn't really have, I mean, I don't know. What did you see?
That's kind of what I'm asking, is did anything else go right for them? And when I go down the list, I mean, I'm pretty sure Klay was like 0 for 76 on layups. I mean, he could not finish a layup, so that's probably going to fix itself at some point. Draymond and Steve Kerr getting right off to screaming at each other, or at least Kerr screaming at Draymond in game one, because Draymond's not hustling back on defense. you know, we've got Draymond's family members, dogging out Zaza Pachulia on Twitter all game because, you know, Zaza's not really getting things done defensively on nearly the same level as Andrew Bogut and Festus Ezeli. You know, honestly, Pachulia is like a rim neglector. He's not the rim protector. He's the guy who just basically lets you get layups, and that's going to be a huge problem for them. It looked even worse than I was kind of expecting, but they did have tough matchup there with San Antonio. But that was a huge problem. And then you look at their bench guys, and there was just no cohesion in that second unit at all. So you go right down the list of, like, who actually played well. You know, I'll give KD, you know, B+, A-. I'll give Steph probably a B for his, you know, for his standard kind of grading on his own curve. And I thought everybody else was a C or worse. And that includes the coaching staff not having them ready. Yeah, I mean, we're going to have to see a couple more games before we rush the judgment on it. But it was pretty much a nightmare debut for them.
Yeah, like, I mean, you talk about not rushing to judgment, and we shouldn't rush to judgment, but I will say that over the past, I mean, part of why I was so confident in what they were going to do opening night is because every person around the NBA that I've talked to for the past month, and then everything I've read, which featured other NBA opinions, everyone has basically said the same thing, like, look, like, there's only so much you can do with this team. The rest of the league is screwed. And, I mean, you know, the scout I talked to, we talked about the Spurs, and literally he was like, you know, Kawhi and LaMarcus, that's a nice duo, but what are you going to do when the Warriors have the best fucking team of all time? Like, that's a direct quote. And it's wild because that first game, man, like, there are some real issues and questions that they're gonna have to figure out.
Let's say this for San Antonio real quick. I mean, Kawhi Leonard had a career high, LaMarcus Aldridge had an A+ game, and Jonathan Simmons had the best game of his life, right? So a lot of things
Jonathan Simmons, I can't believe, like, every time Jonathan Simmons has a game like that or has moments like that, like the block on Steph was ridiculous, he hit a three, the dunk on JaVale, the Spurs just invent these dudes, and it's ridiculous.
You know what I love? I love it when that happens because it completely justifies all the many hundreds of hours I've spent watching Summer League games over the last 8 or 9 years. It's like, well, if Jonathan Simmons can come out of here, like, you know, I'm not completely wasting my life on this, you know, intramural basketball. Yeah.
I don't know. I don't think Jonathan Simmons validates any of that.
I do, 100%.
We're still making big mistakes with Vegas. But, yeah, so the Warriors, I was pretty blown away, and I will say that it goes back to one. There's one conversation I had with a front office guy in Vegas this summer, and he said, basically, he was like, he mentioned some of the win projections saying that they were going to go 81-1, 80-2 or whatever. And he said, look, that's all bullshit, because if you look at it, they're not going to be able to be any better on offense than what they were last year. And they lost rim protection, which is a really big deal in the NBA. So I'm not that worried about what they're going to be. And at the time, I was thinking, all right, man, like, good luck, whatever you need to tell yourself to, like, still care about the season this year. But watching that game against the Spurs, I mean, San Antonio just got so many easy looks inside in transition. Whenever the Warriors would start to run, like, San Antonio would just get layups on the other end. And I don't know. I mean, I think a lot of it is the Spurs have personnel that, I mean, LaMarcus was incredible. But there were some holes exposed in that game that I think are going to be an issue. Like, basically, I think this is going to be a really interesting Warriors season. And, like, 72 hours ago, I basically thought they were going to go 68 and whatever. And it was going to be a real easy. We were just going to watch them dominate all year.
Yeah, I think the biggest issue with the lack of rim protection and with Zaza's fit is that their whole system depends or just sort of relies or assumes that they're going to have rim protection, right? Like, the reason why they can be so aggressive on the perimeter, switch a lot, just turn Draymond Green loose, sometimes as a rover, sometimes as just a super high-energy guy kind of blitzing people. I mean, he can make those gambles because his blind side is protected, right? When the blind side is not protected and their butts are hanging out, for lack of a better word, you know, with their interior defense, the whole thing kind of falls apart and looks a lot easier to crack, you know, pretty quickly. And so I think if there's one big question, if you really want to jump to a conclusion out of game one, I think it's, is Zaza going to be the guy who starts in the finals? Like, if they make it to the finals, is he going to be their starting center? Or do they have to go to, you know, I hate to even say it, but JaVale McGee? Or, I mean, do they go to...
That's the thing. If JaVale McGee is the answer, it's, you're already in trouble.
Yeah. And then, so do you go there? Or do you go to Varejao or one of these other guys? Or do you try to make some sort of a move mid-season where you're, you know, you're picking up a more defensive-minded center off the scrap heap? I'm not even sure who that would be at this point because it's pretty early. Because, frankly, I didn't think we were going to have this conversation, and it's not even November yet. So I think if...
I didn't either. Well, because KD and Steph are so good that I thought that it was not going to be an issue. But I think the other issue that we saw with Klay is that, you know, if you're a shooter, you need touches to get in rhythm to really be effective. And Klay was just not getting those touches. And I think that's going to be an issue with all three of those guys every night is making sure that they get into a rhythm.
I'll be honest, I'm still not worried about their offense yet. Their defense did have me a little bit concerned. And I think if there's anything on their offense that I'm worried about, it's more of the second unit chemistry because those guys just had it rolling so well last year. I mean, yes, there was a big drop off in terms of their efficiency anytime Steph got off the court. But you know, guys like Livingston, Iguodala, I mean, those guys were really in a nice groove for an entire season, and they're going to have to kind of refine that. And it's going to take a little bit. I'm not super worried about the Warriors. I wouldn't be surprised at all if they still hit 65 wins. You know, I think that they're in for a nice season. Yeah. Their offense is going to be able to just overwhelm lots and lots of teams. And there's not very many teams like San Antonio that have the defensive personnel that they do. So just like the Rockets were the perfect matchup for the Lakers on opening night, I think the Spurs were like the nightmare matchup for the Warriors on opening night. And they probably needed that. You know, it's probably good to get slapped in the face, is what I think some of those guys called it, punched in the face. But they have some serious work to do. And I think the real question is, okay, can Zaza be your backline defender if LeBron's the guy turning the corner on the perimeter, you know? Like, if you have Zaza and he's the last man standing between LeBron and the rim, good luck.
I have two questions. I share your, like, big picture optimism. There's so much talent, and Durant is so good that they will likely figure all this stuff out. But the two things that jumped out at me, aside from the interior defense, which a lot of people have talked about, but they're going to have to rely on the death lineup more this year than they even did last year. And a lot of people, we've talked about Draymond having to hold up, but they're also going to need Iguodala. And Iguodala was like a straight up zero on Tuesday night. And he struggled to, like, he had, I think it was back spasms in the finals. And basically, I think his issues in the finals were the most underrated factor in terms of how that series turned. And if he's just old at this point, like, the Warriors are going to have some issues, because then at that point they've got five, maybe six useful NBA players on the roster.
Yeah, I'm not ready to quite go there yet in terms of, is he in the middle of a precipitous decline? I'm with you. Like, him and Bogut, their health,
it's something to watch, though.
Was a big X factor. No question it is. And I think your point about going to the death lineup or going small more often is big because, again, do you trust Draymond to be that guy right now? He didn't look very good to me. Kerr getting on him in the second quarter or third quarter of the first game of the season for the antics, I thought was pretty telling, especially after all this, you know, the things that we talked about earlier this week with that story and how much is he liked internally and so on and so forth. I mean, the look on Kerr's face said, dude, I'm sick of it. I don't want to deal with
Draymond
it anymore.
Also,
I don't want to be telling you about this. You're too deep into your career. You want to be the defensive player of the year. Why are you 90 feet from your own rim talking to a referee about a play that happened 15 seconds ago?
Draymond is also in this zone now where, like, every single thing he does, every interaction with Kerr, every, like, halfway cheap shot, everything is going to be vined, and, like, it'll be all over NBA Reddit. And
I think that's
fair. He's going to have to answer questions about it for the next couple days.
Isn't that fair?
I guess it's fair, but I'm just saying, like, that's going to wear on him over the course of the year. Like, I don't care what he says now, being in this spotlight with everything he does is going to be tough on all those guys.
Yeah, it's a little weird that nobody seems to have really gotten through to him. You know, I mean, he's still doing the leg kicks. He's still talking to the officials. He got a technical foul for yelling after a dunk. I'm not seeing a lot of moderation. You know, it really seems like he's kind of doubling down. So that's another question mark. I think their biggest question marks in order: number one, Zaza. Number two, how well can Draymond handle his role with Zaza behind him, and then the role at center if he has to play there? And then your question about Iguodala, right, and just the chemistry of the second unit in general. It's like that second unit's always going to look a lot worse if Iguodala is not playing at a super high level, right?
Yeah. No, and look, Tuesday night was a wake-up call. It was this team is going to be pretty fascinating to watch over the course of the next, certainly the next month, and then this could drag on all season where we're like, how are they going to sort of piece this together and make it work? The one idea I had for them, and again, like, they're still the clear favorites to win it all in June and whatever, but there are issues, and the one idea I had was, why don't they, like, if I were Bob Myers, I would be calling Philly every single day to try and steal Nerlens Noel.
Yeah, Nerlens would be a great fit. That's exactly what...
I mean, it's a risk because Nerlens, like, he might have knee issues. He's not... There have been some, like, off-court mumbling or murmurs over the last few years. Like, who knows whether he would fit with what they want to do, but, like, big picture, he's kind of exactly what they need, right?
Well, look, I mean, I was just thinking, you know, not too long ago, internally, like, wow, Emeka Okafor would really help these guys. So, yeah, I mean, clearly they have a big they have a big hole here. I am now starting to feel a little bit sorry for Zaza. Is he the new sort of Harrison Barnes whipping boy where anytime they lose, everybody just piles on him because he's the weak link of the five? I think that's already happening.
Yeah. No, it'll be interesting to watch because there's also Golden State fans have not necessarily forgiven Kerr for playing.
Oh, no, not at all.
I think it was Varejao. So there's Kerr could also take some heat going forward. But I don't know. We should talk about the rest of the week here. I don't know. What's jumping out at you?
Well, so I saw bits and pieces of this Timberwolves-Grizzlies game last night. I thought that might have been the most intriguing game in terms of just storylines and shifts of power and stuff like that. Who did you think that game said more about, Minnesota or Memphis? Just to kind of catch people up, Memphis pulled it out right at the end, but they were down super big early. Minnesota raced out to a lead, and then the Timberwolves offense kind of couldn't get anything late. Jamichael Green had a spectacular block on Karl Towns late. What did you make of that game, and who did you think it said more about?
Are you
Minnesota or Memphis? And yes, I'm trolling you a little bit because Minnesota lost. Trust me,
yeah.
I wouldn't have brought this game up if Minnesota won.
Are you doing this just to screw with me? Yeah, man. I like that you're holding me accountable, and I think it says a little bit more about Minnesota because they just. I mean, I was watching pretty much the entire second half, and down the stretch, man, they just don't have the guards. Wiggins isn't quite there yet. LaVine can make some plays, but I don't really trust him. And it's hard with Towns. I mean, they gave it to Towns in ISO a couple times, and he made some plays. But, yeah, closing games is going to be tricky for them because I'm not sure you can give it to Wiggins or LaVine and have them close it out on the perimeter. And Towns, it's hard when a big man is your best player in the final couple minutes.
Yeah, well, you got to give Thibodeau a lot of credit. Made the big adjustment from Sam Mitchell last year to decide to play Towns in the fourth quarter. I mean, that's a real nice...
it's a step in the right direction.
Yeah, that's a real Mensa
move. The other thing to consider is that it's really tough to win at Memphis on opening night. I mean, that stadium is wild. That's a veteran team. Mike Conley and Marc Gasol were both great. And the reason I don't think it says that much about the Grizzlies is because I never had any doubts about the Grizzlies. If Conley and Gasol are going to be healthy, like, they're going to be a really solid team. If Parsons can play 65 games, like, even better. But I think that we learned a little bit more about why certain people on this podcast were a little skeptical about why about the Wolves this year.
Well, you're going to be surprised then with my take, because number one, I do feel a little bit validated, but the fact that they're in that situation late, you know, it's a possession game late.
Yeah.
Zach LaVine's making, you know, terrible foul after terrible foul to sort of milk along Memphis's offense for them. You know, Towns didn't quite have the moment, but he had a couple looks, and, you know, he probably had a few possessions where if he could have done it over, maybe he could have, you know, kind of kept their own offense going there late. Wiggins missed a couple big free throws, which, you know, I don't think he's normally going to miss two free throws back to back in a, you know, minute and a half in a game. So I'm not necessarily making a ton of excuses for them, but I was really impressed that they were kind of in that game in Memphis, like you're saying. And the Grizzlies executed very, very well offensively down the stretch. You know, if that's a B plus instead of an A, you know, Minnesota might walk out of there stealing that win. And it's a proven team, veteran team. They know exactly where they want to go. Mike Conley has had great clutch stats for multiple years late in games. So the fact that they were there told me that maybe they were a little bit further along on the developmental chart than I expected. And I think it's great that they're getting those reps now, because, like I said, I mean, there was times last year when Towns wasn't even playing in the fourth quarter, and it was like, Sam Mitchell, what are you doing here, man? And so to understand that he's like the go-to guy, that they're force-feeding him, that they understand, you know, like anyone else from the outside, that he's sort of the person that you have to go to, and that he has the skill set to do that, where he can attack from the perimeter. And it's not like a forced attack from the perimeter, sort of like DeMarcus Cousins last year. It's like a very smooth face-up. He can go find a jump shot. He can, you know, try to get fouled driving to the hoop. I think it's really, really, really intriguing. So, you know, there's not really like, you know, victories and defeat for Minnesota. I'm sure that they're, you know, sad about it. But I thought overall, I was pretty optimistic, you know, coming away from that loss for them.
All right, good. I appreciate that. I think our relative reactions are because you had pretty low expectations and I was expecting like a 55 win Wolves team this year. So
it's still a play. Ultimately, still a play.
Yeah, we're both in the same place. Well, let's stick with this. What do you think Sixers Thunder says more about those teams? What says more?
Well, I think it said more about the Thunder, to be honest, because they shouldn't be in a game with the Sixers. I understand it was like a crazy environment there, you know, people chanting trust the process, and you've got, you know, your corner bartender flipping Westbrook off on an endless loop on Vine. But this was a team that should be a cut above Philadelphia, right? Like, they shouldn't be in the situation kind of messing around with them. And I thought some of the issues that we talked about, defense, front court depth, so on and so forth, kind of showed up. And I don't know. I think that both Houston and Oklahoma City kind of come away to me as teams that are going to be fighting in the playoff hunt, as opposed to being teams that are hoping for home court advantage. And there was some fluidity there. Like, are they going to be a 4 or 5 seed, or are they going to be a 7 or 8 seed? And my first impression of both those teams is it's closer to that 7 and 8 bubble.
Yeah, I agree. I definitely was hoping for a little bit more from Victor Oladipo. He made some plays like down the stretch, but his shooting is going to be an issue. And yeah, I don't know how exactly. I think most Thunder games are going to look like that, where it's a game that could go either way, and they're going to need Russ to just be indestructible. And my worry is that he's just going to wear down as the season unfolds.
And also, like, in a possession game, you know, 2 minutes left, tie game, is Russ the guy you really pick? You know what I mean? He can always create a shot. He's good at getting the free throw line. But if you don't have tons of shooters around him, if you're relying on his finishing ability in traffic, if you're relying on his own jump shot and his own shot selection, all those things make me nervous. Like, if I had to have one guy between him and Harden, or even him, Harden, and Dame, you know, late in games, he might be my third pick among those three guys.
But look, I feel like we've also kind of buried the lead here. I mean, what about our guy, Joel Embiid?
Yeah, well, we really should have not said that we found Joel Embiid not funny until after we read Lee Jenkins's story about him, because he came out hilarious in that story, much funnier than he's ever been on Twitter. I'm rethinking a little bit of his personality.
The human meme.
Yeah. I don't know exactly what to make of him. I feel like we're kind of in a bubble period with him, and everybody's saying he fell to the ground and I held my breath for 45 seconds and thought I was going to pass out because I was so worried he was going to get injured. Definitely has me a little bit nervous about how this is going to play out. But I think,
right,
you know, celebration. I mean, it had been 800 plus days since he was drafted. He's finally on the court. He shows out pretty well. They extended his minutes a little bit. I think great, you know, great for him.
You know what has struck me as odd is there's a lot of like chest thumping from Sixers fans around the internet.
Oh yeah,
being
surprise,
like,
surprise.
The process worked. Everyone who hated on us was wrong. The process worked, and I'm like, look, man, it's been 4 years since the process started. It's going to be another 2 years until playoffs are like even a realistic thing. I don't know if the process worked.
I can tell you why the process didn't work. Because they send out injury release press releases that have like seven paragraphs of different guys. Like, and they do it two or three times a week. Like, they have so many injury issues.
Yeah,
they made so many bad draft picks with guys who are injury prone that their press releases...
They've also like low-key ruined Nerlens Noel's career. So that's another strike against the process. He's now refusing to play for the Sixers until they trade him. So... I don't know. It's a longer conversation than just Joel Embiid is on the court now, so it all worked.
Yeah. Well, I go back to my thing. He's got to stay healthy because Greg Oden looked phenomenal for stretches with the Blazers. Like, he'd get back on the court and everyone would do the drooling thing, and it's impossible not to when you see someone that big and that active and that skilled and with that much personality. I mean, let's not forget Oden had, you know, a fantastic personality when he was healthy and comfortable, much like Embiid. And you know, it can go sideways quick. I mean, one bad play, and it's terrible to think that way, and it'll probably take months to kind of get out of that, you know, kind of panic when you watch him play, but that's reality.
Well, the flip side of that, though, I kind of liked what I saw from the Sixers. Saric struggled, but I think he's going to be better as the season unfolds, and Sergio Rodriguez is going to be a lot of fun all year long, and Embiid, if he's on the court, he's just so comfortable, and he's comfortable shooting over anybody. Like, he just, I don't know, there was more poise than I ever would have expected from a dude basically playing his first ever NBA game. He was going toe-to-toe with Steven Adams and was not scared at all and was kind of getting whatever he wanted. So, yeah, like, that... I definitely watched and was like, man, I hope this guy stays healthy, just because it would be a lot of fun to have a classic big man who can kind of get whatever he wants.
Yeah, I think when you've been through it all, basketball probably seems pretty easy, right? And I think you could really see that in his body language, his demeanor, the trash talk.
Well, his jumper is so smooth, too.
Yeah. Yeah, which was another great anecdote from Lee's story, right? I mean, Embiid going on YouTube to watch random white people to learn how to shoot a jumper. That was...
I like that. He was not watching me.
Yeah. But no, I do think there's some truth to that. It's like, he has no reason to have any hangups on the court, right? And that was something that Oden actually, you know, struggled with. I mean, he was constantly worried people were, you know, people are watching him, people are judging him. He was very self-conscious. And I think that can go one of two ways, right? I mean, when you're spending that much time away from basketball... You can either say, I have nothing to lose, I'm going to go out there and have the best time of my life, or you can get on the court and you can kind of freeze up and think, oh, it's been so long since I've been away, everybody's going to be comparing me to their previous expectations of me, and you can kind of flounder. And it does seem like Embiid, from a mental standpoint, is in a very, very good place compared to where he could have been and compared to where he was during times of his rehabilitation, which sounded like it got pretty dark for him. So I think that makes... him an optimistic story in ways that maybe I didn't expect.
100%. Like, I think the mental aspect is the thing that has been most surprising for me, is he really does kind of carry himself like the best player on the floor, which is impressive. And, you know, fingers crossed here. We'll see. But let's run through some other games real quick. Blazers Jazz, which team said more opening night?
Well, I actually think it said more about the Jazz, and actually both good and bad. I mean, they're down three guys. They don't have Favors. They don't have Hayward, and they don't have Burks, which that's rough off the start of the season.
I mean, Joe Johnson was putting in work.
Yeah, he was. So they're in a situation where they're down, and they're very competitive with the Blazers basically all game long. But unfortunately, because they don't have Hayward, they don't have their full late game complement. And so when it gets into this, you know, crunch time situations where they really struggled last year, it looked like a lot more of the same. You know, Hood taking very tough contested shots. George Hill trying to pitch in here and there with the ball in his hands, but you know, he's not the greatest creator for himself, and so he's not getting great looks. You got, you know, Johnson taking contested step back threes. Like, if you're the Blazers and you look at the shots they gave up in the last 3 minutes of that game, like, you're probably handing out like chocolate cake to your team after the game saying great job, you know. And so
yeah,
on the other end, like, Damian's gonna go off. Like, that's what he does. He's gonna get a really good shot and he's gonna hit a lot of them. And so their very strong defense just kind of didn't hold up there. So I think for Utah, they got to figure out this late game thing or they're never going to reach their potential.
For sure.
And I don't know if it's Hayward coming back. Does that unlock it? Because now they've got all of their weapons on the court. Do they need to mix up their lineups so that they've got, you know, five offensive threats? Like, does that mean you have Diaw as your center late? And they got to get creative here because it just bogs down so much. And, you know, Rodney Hood taking 15-footers with two hands in his face, I don't know how that's ever going to work as your late-game strategy. I love Rodney Hood, but that's not going to be...
Don't knock Rodney Hood.
I'm not. I'm a big Rodney Hood guy. I'm not trying to go there. I'm just saying, like, look, he's not James Harden. He's not that star-level player right now.
Yeah.
And if he's taking tough shots every possession, good luck.
I go the other direction on this one. I felt very validated watching Joe Johnson give Al-Farouq Aminu the business throughout the second half. And that was also a moment where I was like, man, I'm getting way too excited about Joe Johnson. I'm in too deep with the NBA.
That was a good way
on night one.
That was a good way for him to start his All-Star campaign, though, don't you think?
Yeah, exactly, which I'll be leading this year. No, I thought Utah was actually like, that was an encouraging night for them because bottom line is, like, Boris Diaw, another dude who I love, my coffee buddy from San Antonio, he should not be on the court at the end of games. He's just, at this point in his career, like, he shouldn't be playing 30 minutes. I don't know exactly what he played in that game, but he definitely started and finished.
So here's my question,
and
though.
They need...
Like, is he on the court because he's their best option? Like, he might have to be, you know?
Well, yeah. No. He's on the court because Favors was hurt. And then they just didn't have anybody to play. And so I think given some of the injuries, like, they were still impressive. But the closer thing is going to be an issue because, like, a lot of Jazz fans were like, well, we didn't have Gordon Hayward. And, I mean, watching that game, I was like, look, you guys could have had Gordon Hayward. It would not have mattered because the Blazers had Lillard. So... Yeah, when I was watching that game, I was like, wow, Lillard is on a whole other level this year, and it's going to be a lot of fun to watch them. And I think, like we talked about earlier this week, like, he might be enough to just, like, vault them into the middle of the West by himself. So, like, that was my biggest takeaway was all the reasons to doubt the Blazers are still there, but, like, Lillard is just that good.
Yeah, I mean, in the Jazz's defense, it's very hard to win in Portland on opening night. They're, like, basically, you know, not undefeated, but that's an amazing environment. They have a very, very strong record on opening night at home. And also, Lillard had a big-time performance. To me, he's made such great improvements on offense. He's so much stronger on the ball. They've done a great job of getting him up to speed when he comes off those pick and rolls, so he's really an attack mentality. He's improved and talked about his improvement finishing around the rim. He's in much better control as he cuts through the paint and just sort of, you know, much stronger on the ball, I guess is the phrase they use when you're kind of, you know, driving through traffic. In other words, you're not loose with it, getting, you know, your pocket picked. You're not out of control, wild, flying in towards the baseline. He has taken some serious steps forward as an, you know, attack-minded player. And so that makes him just that much better because he always can go back to that step back three, much like a James Harden that's, like, right there in his wheelhouse. So there was no question late which team was more comfortable in a close game. And that really favors Portland, I think, because, you know, he's going to have lots and lots of those reps this season, just like he's had in years past. And, you know, he's had to work at that. I mean, this is basically what year three or four of him being a major go-to option. And all of that experience has really added up. So I think for Portland, I mean, they still got a lot of lineup questions in terms of who's going to play, how they're going to play together. Evan Turner.
Nah, it's all about Dame. It's all about Dame in Portland. That's all that matters.
Yeah.
So what else jumped out at you from last night? I mean, you were at Staples, so I don't know how much you were able to watch.
Yeah, that was...
Did you see Anthony Davis?
I mean, I saw the numbers. Well, so first of all, I could not believe... So he almost had as many points and rebounds as all of his teammates combined last night, and they lost.
No.
He had 50 points, his teammates had 52 points, and I think he had 16 rebounds, and his teammates had 18 rebounds. I mean, here's my takeaway from that game, because they lost to the Nuggets of all teams. I think that they should just fold the Pelicans and hold the lottery for Anthony Davis.
Well, yeah, that might have been the first ever 50-point game that like made most basketball fans sad.
Yeah,
because
it won't be the last.
Seeing those numbers, you're just like, man, okay, like, so you and Solomon Hill against the world. I guess we can get behind this. Like, it's just tough.
Yeah, it's terrible. I mean, I don't know. There's not a lot to analyze, and everybody who was sort of at the arena last night was looking at those numbers, and it's just like, poor Anthony, poor Anthony. And I don't know.
No, I mean,
there's no way out of it.
Hold up.
That's what the frustrating part is. It's like quicksand, right? There's no way out of this for him. I mean, how much more can he do?
It's great to see him healthy, though. It's that number one. It's great to see him healthy. It's great to remember how good he is when he's good. I mean, I think the most ridiculous number was the 7 steals. I mean, the dude is just a freak.
I didn't forget how good he was. I knew he was good, but I forgot how sad it was to watch him not have any help whatsoever and not even have the hope that help is coming, right? Like, give them Tyreke Evans and Drew Holiday, and do you really think that makes that much of a difference? I mean, I like both those guys. I probably like Tyreke Evans more than the average person, but if we're talking big picture, like, is this team going to matter? Do those two guys at full strength for the rest of the season, once they come back healthy, make the Pelicans relevant? I don't think so.
Yeah, that's the thing. I mean, when Tyreke Evans is like the hope for the rest of the season, it's kind of an issue.
And they've got no trade assets.
Nurkic, though?
They got no trade assets. And on top of that, Buddy Hield. Wasn't he supposed to be the plug-and-play shooter? How many points did he have last night? Like 4? I mean, come on. Like, what are they doing?
I'm still pretty upset at them for drafting Buddy Hield. But look, the flip side is they will win like 30 games and have another crack in the lottery this year. And that would get Anthony Davis some of the help that he needs. You know, you never know.
I'm not being able to be talked into that after the way their drafts have gone in recent years and just how they've managed their assets. Like, I don't know. They've almost reached the Knicks territory where I just expect them to screw it up no matter what good thing happens to them.
How Dell Demps is still employed is like a long form. I need Outside the Lines to dive into that one. Yeah, the other thing is, Anthony Davis was just roasting the Nuggets' interior defense because those guys are just a little bit slower. Nurkic was awesome on offense. 23, I think he had 14 rebounds. Great to see him healthy, but he and Jokic are a step slow when it comes to Anthony Davis. And then they've had Kenneth Faried on him a bunch. And Faried is like 6'6". So if you put him on Anthony Davis, like, games like last night are what's going to happen.
Yeah, I'm not really a big believer in what Denver's trying to do inside. I mean, I guess they don't really have any other options, but I'm not really taking anything away from that win for them. So we'll see.
Fair enough. So can you explain to me, you texted me last night saying Sam Mitchell was talking about you and Rob on the broadcast?
Well, so the Raptors media is so mad about where we put DeRozan on the top 100 this year. He was in the 40s, I think 46.
Yeah.
And so DeRozan just rips us at media day and says we're stupid and so on and so forth. And that's kind of to be expected. That's happened like 3 years in a row right now. But they've really taken up the call to arms. And so we had the Raptors beat writers like hashtagging prove him, because that's, I guess, what he writes whenever he feels like he's being doubted. So the beat writers are hashtagging prove him to us last night. And then on the broadcast, they're ripping it. And I guess they threw it to the studio show, and Sam Mitchell was just unloading on it, saying, you know, DeRozan's underrated and on and on and on. Because he had a pretty good game. I think he had 40 in their debut, in their opening win over Detroit. So not great. You know, we're really, really sparking.
So you're not welcome back in Canada.
Yeah, no. And I think it's like an international incident at this point. I think that they're really ready to declare war. And this isn't the first time, by the way. I went up there for the All-Star game, and they kind of like tricked me into coming into some studio radio show they had set up. And then they just bombarded me with DeRozan top 100 questions. And it wasn't even that year's top 100. It was like an 18 months previous version of the top 100 that we had supposedly underrated him. So they really are holding grudges up there. But like I've said before, we love it when people outplay their rating, and it would be awesome if, you know, if DeRozan could get a couple assists, you know, if he could step up the defensive intensity over the course of an 82-game season, we love that.
You and Rob, the ratings committee, I love it. Yeah, So wait, did they mention you by name? Or is it just Sports Illustrated?
I think they just go after Sports Illustrated.
Are you taking this all down with you?
No, I'm pretty sure okay, I'm taking great. All of, I'm, you know, Time Inc., Sports Illustrated, the whole caboodle's coming down with us.
Well, I don't have any passionate opinion one way or the other on DeMar DeRozan. I just, like, he's in the Jonas Valanciunas category where you're a good player who I just can't bring myself to care about. So I'm happy that it worked out last night. Good for them. You know?
Well, hey, look, if he doesn't take a step back after his big contract here, that's like the single best thing that could happen to that franchise. So in terms of like, sure. If they want to make a run at the one seed, that would be great. It's also weird that they don't give us credit for having Lowry over Dame and Kyrie and some of the other guys in that conversation. I mean, you feel like we would get...
That's true.
You know, like we'd get back pats and like, wow, we really appreciate you guys. Somehow that always gets overlooked. I don't know why.
Yeah, let me be clear that you had Lowry at least 10 spots too high. So,
oh, great.
It is what it is.
I'm getting ripped on my own podcast, just like Sam Mitchell's quarter halftime show, whatever.
That's right. All right, we should finish out. I have one question for you. Did Tuesday night change how you feel about the MVP race at all? I think we both picked KD to win.
Well, I think it's going to be a lot of competition. I mean, we knew it was going to be a deep field. I think...
Yeah, it's wide open.
The Warriors have to have the best record in the NBA if either one of their guys is going to win it. So from that standpoint, if that's a narrow gap, then yeah, I think it's going to be harder to make that case. I mean, they really have to run away with it, I think, if one of those two guys is going to emerge.
But the other thing is Kawhi just looked like a monster.
Yeah, and for sure.
Like, he was more aggressive on offense that night than I think I've seen him like all year.
I know,
last year.
But remember, that's like
certainly more aggressive than he was against OKC
for sure. But that's the best offensive game he's ever had. It's his career high night, right? So like, you know, Durant's had some nights, you know, where he's puts up 50 and makes it look easy. So I'm not going to overreact to Kawhi's first night. That being said, he's absolutely in the MVP conversation. There's no question about it. And if the Spurs have anything close to the best record in the West, he's going to have a very, very difficult case to overcome because everybody likes him. There's not really a knock on him, you know what I mean? Especially if he stays healthy. Yeah. So I think he's got a very strong case. I think Harden and Westbrook are both going to be in that situation where their teams aren't going to be good enough, so they're probably going to wind up falling out. Same thing with Anthony Davis. I think Damian Lillard's MVP campaign is gaining momentum very quickly. He's set up very nicely to kind of be in that conversation all night long or all season long. And hey, by the way, what about LeBron? You know, he's not a guy we even mentioned. We just kind of wrote him off. Triple double in 32 minutes, looking
just a
very
casual triple double,
looking very motivated, you know, on top of things. And you know, Cleveland looked ready to roll. They didn't look like necessarily.
Kyrie in that third quarter was just on another planet. Like when he gets rolling, he's the most unstoppable player in the league.
So there you go. So I think that puts LeBron right back into it because, you know, if they're the best team in the East and, you know, they're kind of beating expectations, winning 60 games or whatever, that puts LeBron right there too. So I think it's going to be a very layered MVP conversation. I don't think it's going to be decided until like at least March this year. Last year's was pretty unusual in that Steph just kind of snatched it like mid-November or early December. But yeah, it's going to be a great one.
Another thing about that game Tuesday night is I was like legitimately upset at the Knicks. I was pissed off that they were on my television. I just don't want to watch Derrick Rose play basketball anymore.
Yeah, it was really bad. You know, in the entertainment value rankings, I made a comment that like, hey, everything else is screwed up, but like at least Porzingis can kind of save it. And that's not true. I was wrong. One game in.
Well, you know what, though? So I talked to a friend, Juliette Littman from The Ringer, and she made the point that if they just cut Derrick Rose, they would be a lot more fun. And because then you'd have Brandon Jennings. It would be kind of like a fun underdog to root for. But Rose just like ruins everything with that team.
Yeah, I hated the move when they got him. And I said that I said that Robin Lopez was the best player in the trade. And people got mad. And sorry, that's true. It's not even close. Rose is terrible.
Awful.
And by the way, he just came out, I think yesterday night, saying he wants to run pick and roll every play, which means he wants the ball in his hands constantly. So great. Like, let's see how that works out. No, he's not good anymore. And I don't think he's ever going to realize it. It's not his fault. You know, it's really hard to go from an MVP level to where he's at now and just not kind of try to rationalize it internally so you can kind of keep moving forward. But he's just not the same guy. It was a terrible decision by Phil Jackson.
He just bums me out as a basketball player. But we should finish up. Let's new open floor tradition. It's Thursday afternoon, and just as we finished the last podcast with completely wrong Golden State predictions, who do you like tonight, Clippers or Blazers?
That's a good question. Something tells me...
because it's in Portland.
Yeah, it's in Portland, which makes it really tricky. Something tells me the Clippers might come out and have one of these nights that shocks people a little bit. They're not really afraid of that building. They've won there before. And a storyline we've seen this week already is like these stars who have been just waiting all summer have exploded. And I feel like both Chris and Blake have been waiting quite a while here. And
Chris, as much love as we've given Damian Lillard on this podcast, Chris Paul has just owned that dude for the last couple of years.
100%. And then Portland's, you know, interior defensive issues that, you know, Blake was kind of able to exploit when he was healthy in those first couple of playoff games, I think are still going to be there. They don't have a great matchup for DJ. So I think I'm going to lean Clippers here, which is great news for the Blazers.
Yeah, I think I will lean Clippers as a pick, and I'm going to be rooting like crazy for Dame. And also, what do you think, Hawks-Wizards, 7:30? That's the main event, right?
Yeah, that's real must-see TV.
Let's set the tone, Wizards. Come on, we got this.
I have absolutely no idea on that one. I'll go Wizards. I'll throw you a bone. I'll go Wizards.
All right, good. I'm going Wizards too. John Wall, it's us against the world. All right, well, we will be back next week. Thank you, Ben. Thank you, Golden State, for really making things a little interesting this year. And man, basketball's back.
This has been a digital media production. Find your voice.
Another great edition of Open Floor is in the books. Did you know Locked On has a daily podcast for all 30 NBA teams? If you're a Lakers fan, search Locked On Lakers. A Celtics fan, search Locked On Celtics. Warriors fans, search Locked On Warriors. Yes, all 30 NBA teams have a daily bite-sized podcast on the Locked On Podcast Network. Search on Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts for Locked On, your favorite team. Or tell your smart speaker to play podcast Locked On, your favorite team.
It's the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.